time for African Mirror on a Thursday, African Mirror on Newsbeat. And today we have a look at Cameroon. Cameroon is facing deep generational tensions as a 92-year-old President Paul Biya secures yet another seven-year term after the October elections. He's ruled a country in which most citizens have never ever seen another leader. Critics warn that Biya's 40 years long grip on power, coupled with opaque succession plans for his son Frank Biya, who's only 54 years of age by comparison, risks political stagnation, unrest and uncertainty for a population eager for a change and new leadership. Online is Thelma Nyahi, researcher at the Democracy Development Program in KZN and a PhD candidate at UCT. Thelma Nyahi, welcome.
Thank you for having me, and good day to the listeners.
Yeah, Cameroon's Paul Biya has been described as the president who never loses. eighth term of office. Good going. I know that Trump is quite jealous of him, but God help us if Trump's in power when he's 92, if he gets that old, but that's just a footnote. But on a more serious note, Paul Biya, he's certainly not welcome, but he is hanging in for dear life, and Gen Z in Cameroon is not happy.
Not at all. I mean, it's a terrible telltale of the numbers themselves. I mean, if you look at the median age range of Cameroon, according to the World Barometer, most of the people, most of the population is literally between 19 and 20. That's the median age. And then here you have a re-elected leader who is almost quadruple the age, literally being the leader. Like, it's unheard of. But I think the main question, despite all the criticisms around political longevity without progress, you know, the dynastic succession concerns with his son, even looking at the economic decline or the human rights violations, the main question is, why does he keep winning? And I think this is a question that most Africans would like to, you know, get to understand, because it seems like it's a common pattern. We, our leaders, despite their age range, whether they're in their 70s, they're in their 60s, they will still want to be re-elected. And the main question is, why do they still win?
That is the question, isn't it? I mean, Paul Biya himself is a walking fossil. They have to point him in the right direction when there's a microphone, otherwise he'll walk straight off the edge of the stage. He's so old. It's just hard to understand. And, of course, it does seem as if he is kind of thinking about his son taking power. His son is 54 years age, but he's a businessman, which tells me, in Cameroonian terms, he's been benefiting from the largesse of his father. He's a businessman because he's been dabbling in government contracts. I'll put it that way, a theme which is very familiar to us in South Africa.
Certainly. I mean, if you look at it in that sense, you tend to find, even with the way his leadership kind of like style is one that is opaque. He's barely ever in the country, and yet decisions are made on the ground. And even looking at his son, in as much as it hasn't been officially put out in place, there are still like rumors going around where it seems like in the shadows he's being prompted and being, you know, trained for that transition, which is quite stressful. And if we are to look at, go back to this question of why do they actually run, or why do such leaders, these older leaders, seem to every single time win, it goes back to this aspect of the fact that when it comes to the institutions themselves, there's institutional decay. You look at the parliament, you look at the justice system, it just seems to be there in terms of being symbolic figures. But in actual fact, they still support whatever the president decides. So there isn't necessarily that separation of powers when it comes to how the country is governed at the end of the day, or how the constitution is handled at the end of the day. Again, linking it with the constitution, where the constitution is constantly amended to allow the constant multiple re-election kind of like situation, where it's outside, you know, normal constitutional working, but at the end of the day, they're just amending it for their sake.
It's his eighth term of office since 1982, which is epic in the wrong sense. And of course, you make a very valid point about the youth of Cameroon being very disgruntled. But of course, if we start to excavate the Cameroonian landscape, as it were, despite the disenfranchisement of the majority of the population, because voting doesn't seem to make much difference, and the frustrations, you've got Anglophone Cameroon, because Cameroon is Francophone and Anglophone, and the English-speaking region of Cameroon is completely neglected by Biya. So one can only imagine what must be happening in those regions, because Cameroon is a country that is completely underreported.
Certainly, and as a result of that, I mean, I think there were some reports of violence even during the actual voting period. So it really does connect to that idea of, when it comes to the Anglophone crisis, we have people that have either been victims of, like, you know, mass murder or violence, or have been displaced. And if one is displaced, how exactly would they actually contribute to that voting right, or even exercise their voting right at the end of the day? So you get to see that even within the voting pool, it's not everyone who's actually exercising their voting right. And even if they exercise their voting right, they're not necessarily doing it within the human rights kind of like perspective.
No, 100%. And if one looks at some of the headlines, and headlines in Cameroon are also vague, protests turned deadly, four killed. And if an international headline says four have been killed, you can claim at least 40 have been killed, because they tend to, again, underplay the whole scenario that we're dealing with. What is also sad is that Cameroon is basically on its own, because I think even the African Union, with its own coterie of very old presidents, is beginning to feel embarrassed and looking the other way when it comes to Cameroon.
Ideally, but I think it also goes back to this idea of the fact that when it comes to the opposition itself, we don't necessarily, and this is a reality for most African countries, we don't necessarily have strong opposition. I mean, if you take a look at the Cameroon situation, where they live on opponents, and most of those opponents were literally ministers under Biya's previous administration. So it makes you actually wonder, like, is this really opposition, or is like fake opponents were put in place just to, you know, just stabilize the numbers themselves and just, you know, distribute the numbers themselves. So even with the AU or the other leaders themselves, yes, they might be embarrassed about the whole ordeal, but at the end of the day, it does still link up or align with their own kind of like realities in their own countries. So why would I pick on another country when it's the same situation that's serving me in my own country?
Yeah, no, that's a valid point indeed, which really does crush a lot of debate. And of course, the opposition leader in Cameroon called Issa Tchiroma, I don't know very much about the man, but he claimed victory in the elections, and I'm pretty sure that he probably did win the election, but obviously because Biya's boys, as it were, had full control over the ballot boxes, it was very easy just to stuff them and give Biya a 54% majority, which for a person who's been in power for as long as he has and survived for as long as he has, is actually a very slender majority. And 54% tells me stuffed ballots, for sure.
Certainly. And I think there was even a rumor of the deceased also being part of those ballots.
The Walking Dead, yeah. The Walking Dead played a prominent part in many elections. The zombies.
Yeah. So really, at the end of the day, is that going back to that same idea of there's no separation of powers, so there wouldn't necessarily be a way of ethically verifying facts or ethically verifying statistics, because at the end of the day, they are serving one master.
No, absolutely. And of course, I mean, it's really depressing. Obviously, there are good stories in Africa. most people in Africa are good people. It's just that our politicians tend to stink the room hugely. It does get frustrating, doesn't it, Thelma, when there's so many good things that we can talk about, and then you get people like Paul Biya who just put a whole – they're a real party poopers, aren't they?
Truly. I mean, it takes us back. Like, okay, you start wondering about your own country and where it's been going in terms of its own democracy, and if even the idea of democracy is something that is a reality, it's just a fleeting thought. But even with that in place, I think it's also about our own reaction to it, right? Being a young continent, or generally in terms of demographics, we're a young continent, it's a matter of going back to the drawing board and trying to leverage the little power that we have. So going back, when it comes to the digital platforms themselves, leverage those platforms, because it's only through that that the story can actually get out, and mobilization can also, you know, come out of it, and the truth can come out of it as well. In as much as, of course, you know, countries will try to, you know, stop those social media platforms or even pause the internet services themselves, but it doesn't mean that we should stop. Like, there has to be a constant thing where we never, you know, never stop, because the minute we stop is the minute we fail ourselves. At the same time, the idea of coalition is something, and as much as in some countries it might not be an easy thing to go about, but it is something that we may need to try and implement. Because this whole idea of having oppositions, but within those oppositions, having them fragmented, still serves, you know, the status quo at the end of the day. So a stronger coalition where the opposition itself comes together to produce one voice or to stand for one voice could be the only way where we can go ahead and fight for this understanding of a reform or this understanding of change.
100%. And unfortunately, we have to leave it there. This week's edition of the African Mirror on Newsbeat, when we look at matters Africa. Special guest for this week, Thelma Nyahi, researcher at the Democracy Development Program at KZN and a PhD candidate at UCT. Thelma, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.